it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Drive on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan. Tune in on game day to hear him 3 hours before kickoff and immediately following the final whistle. Here's the new pregame and postgame host for the Chiefs Radio Network.
Kansas City wins the game!
Joshua Briscoe.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Briscoe. Briscoe, when was the last time that you ate at Long John Silver's?
Oh, man, a decade, 2 decades maybe. I think with my grandparents in Wichita, I'm guessing that specific Long John Silver's is no longer standing. So I'm gonna say maybe 20 years.
Tomorrow, if I gave you a $1,000 gift card and I gave you a gift card to Boston Market or Long John Silver's, which one would you take?
Ooh, well, $1,000 is a lot. I think $1,000 of Long John Silver's would do, like, irreparable damage to me and whoever else I took. So I might give Boston Market a go, but that's another one. I'm curious how you guys found this topic today, because those are, like, throw in a little A&W in there, and you were mentioning three chains that I don't think I have seen in the wild in 10 years.
Nobody has eaten an A&W since 1997.
No, I drank an A&W yesterday. They still make a good sugar-free root beer. That's great. They're not serving food. Not in our region. No way.
Briscoe, if you had a power ranking, maybe you have one and I just missed it, so I apologize if I missed it. What team would you have at number one right now on your power ranking? And is it not crazy to think that the Chiefs could be number one on your power rankings? And if the playoffs started today, the Chiefs would not make the playoffs.
It's not crazy to put the Chiefs there. I guess in like a King of the Hill kind of sense, they probably should. Because I think I would have said the Lions, and a few weeks ago I would have said the Eagles. And at this point, no, I don't mind putting the Chiefs there. If you want to talk me into like the Colts or whatever, I really respect what they've done. But I'm not putting Daniel Jones's team above Patrick Mahomes's team when they've looked good altogether. Let me run this by you because I don't have a power ranking, but I have a new theory of the 2025 NFL season that's making it a little bit easier for me. Here's the theory. Everybody's the Chargers now. All of them. There are 31 Los Angeles Chargers and then the New York Jets. And that's it. Everybody else is some version of the Chargers. Pretty good and can beat you. Pretty injured and probably won't beat you. Super Bowl hopes. High draft pick hopes. Like, there is just such a tar pit of NFL teams right now that are all so close together. The margins are so thin that if you tell me, yeah, I get Patrick Mahomes and a 3-3 football team that's getting its number one offensive weapon back, I think that's probably the best team in football because everybody is just neck and neck.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, that I think there are 8 teams that are just, why are you even talking about them? Like, there's never a reason that you and I should be talking about the Saints or the Jets or the Dolphins. They're not going anywhere. They don't have a chance this year. Why waste anybody's time? Once you get past those 8 teams, there's 24 teams that just anything is absolutely possible. 1 week, you'll think the Buffalo's the best team in the league. They got dominated start to finish by the Atlanta Falcons. The Falcons lost 30-0 to the Carolina Panthers a couple of weeks ago. Like, you're completely right. Like, once you get away from the dregs of the league, they either got bad quarterbacks, they got a young quarterback, they're about to fire their head coach, they just fired their head coach. Like, once you get away from those teams, your guess is just as good as anybody's when it comes to who's good and who's not in this league.
It's so funny because I really think if we wanted to really nail this down, we could get that dregs number down even further. Now, like, the Dolphins only win is against the Jets. They belong in that group. But, like, the Saints are insane because of what the Giants did. The Giants lost to the Chiefs, beat the Chargers, lost to the Saints, beat the Eagles. That's just a thing that happened in a 4-week stretch of football this year for a below-average Giants team. Like, that's just the place that kind of everybody's in now, which is, again, I think why this reflects well for the Chiefs, not just because the Bills have dropped a couple of games and the lead in the AFC West is already almost gone for the Chargers and Broncos, even though the Chargers obviously have all those head-to-head wins that they got to start the season. If you tell me that a team just not dying of self-inflicted wounds, which is what the Chiefs did against the Jags, obviously, a team that doesn't have those problems and is able to play some like relatively consistent like high function football that's just not total chaos, that's probably the best team in the league. That's probably a team that should be favored every week. The Chiefs will not end this season with three regular season losses. I'd be stunned. Everybody's going to have another messy game somewhere down the schedule, but I wouldn't be buying anyone's stock more than I'd be buying the Chiefs right now, which feels so crazy considering how the season started, but also so fitting considering who their quarterback is.
Let me ask you this. Are you buying stock in the Chiefs right now because of their offense or because of their defense?
I think I'm buying it because of the offense. I think what we saw from the defense against the Lions, and to a pretty decent extent against the Ravens as well, is I think you see with the defense that there are two ways they can help you win games. You can have some Chris Jones takeover plays, and you can have Spags plays, or even Spags days, where he's able to make more than the sum of their parts. I think that's good enough if the offense is great. And I think we are on the verge of seeing a recreation of a truly great Chiefs offense.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe, who is the pre- and post-game host for the Chiefs Radio Network, getting his thoughts right now on the Chiefs as they sit at 3-3. Let's talk about the offensive line. I guess a two-part question here. I guess let's start with Joshua Simmons. I think you always have to give it a large measure of respect because it is a personal issue. I don't know what it is. It could be health related. It could be family related. I don't know. When you say personal issue, I think everybody has to bounce back. But can we at least acknowledge that this feels a little bit different than like a normal family situation? At least how they're talking about it and how the conversation around it is. Like, why was Andy so short about it? Nate Taylor is using words like mysterious. That's not usually how we describe a personal matter.
No, you're right. And just for like absolute clarity, I don't know a lick more than, as far as I can tell, anybody else does. So I'm in a similar spot here. But I do think you can look at how they've responded so far and go like, well, this is a little strange. Like, there is an air around this, again, like Nate talking about like it being mysterious or whatever. On the other hand, we just saw an example with Chris Jones coming back from his aunt's funeral. We just saw an example of, it seemed like he and the team were communicating. They figured it out. He got back just in time for the game. It was a very weird and kind of like chaotic situation, and obviously an incredibly tough day for him. But like, it seemed like they were all kind of on the same page. You have that James Palmer tweet from Sunday that made it sound like some people in the Chiefs organization didn't know what was going on there. So that is strange to me. You haven't asked me about Jalen Moore yet, so I'm not going to go to that total tangent, but I want to put a spotlight on what he did for a number of reasons. But yeah, no, it is a little bit strange, especially when we just saw everybody seemed to handle the Chris Jones thing pretty well. Again, not knowing what's going on, frankly, I don't know. I'm not even in a place where I necessarily want to say that what the personal matter is even matters to me. What I do think, though, matters is you want to make sure that the player and the team are in communication about all this, where nobody's being left in the dark. I think pretty much everybody can respect, like, hey, sometimes there's stuff you've got to handle, whatever the family business may be. Again, not a clue from my side, but the idea of like having to go handle some family business, that's not inherently weird. The air of mystery, or sort of the idea that the Chiefs are handling it a little bit differently, I do think is noteworthy.
Yeah, and to me, I think that's the only reason why it's a story, and I use that very loosely. It is how it was reported. You and I both know that when a report comes from a Rappaport or a Mike Garofolo or a Tom Pelissero, like, that is coming from an agent or that is coming from the team. And then when you see that report that says that everybody on the front office wasn't aware on the same page, it lets you just know that this is a deeper story than just, hey, you had a family emergency, you notify the team and you're off going to handle that until you come back. That's the interesting part about this, because that's not what happened with Chris Jones. Chris Jones was put on the list. We then found out pretty quickly why he was on the list, and we kind of had all the information up front. We have none of the information right now with Joshua Simmons.
Right, and again, the question just is, what do the Chiefs know? Because Josh Simmons doesn't owe that to everybody else. The Chiefs don't even necessarily owe that to everybody, but they need to be unified there. Again, obviously, they were with Chris Jones, and that's been a very different vibe on the Simmons case.
Right now, we're going through some of the top storylines when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't think that people are really giving enough credit and respect to what Jalen Moore just did. He had a kid in the morning. He then leaves his family. We talk about personal issues. I think it would have been very easy. You haven't been playing. You haven't been getting reps with the one for you just to be inactive because you're spending time with your family. No one would have faulted you for that decision, for the birth of your child. You then left there, went to go play again. You haven't been practicing, haven't been getting those reps. I imagine you're frustrated. You signed with the team in free agency thinking that you were going to start. You haven't gotten an opportunity to start at either left or right tackle. And for you to perform and play at that level the way that he did on Sunday Night Football, Jalen Moore deserves a lot of credit for just quite simply being a pro.
I 100% agree, and I'm going to say some of the same stuff here, but I'm just going to restate it because I think it's worth doing. He signs with the Chiefs as like their big initial splash free agent, and the idea, no, you can't promise this, you can't put this in Sharpie, but the idea has to be, hey, Jalen, you've been behind Trent Williams, you've played in a pinch, and you've played very well, now we're going to sign you here, and Jalen Moore has to believe at that point, at bare minimum, he's going to have a chance to win the job to protect Patrick Mahomes' blind side this year and next year on this two-year deal that he's on. That how that goes is also going to impact his next contract because it is a short-term deal. Now, look, I think we all expect him to start at right tackle next year because the Juwan Taylor deal becomes something the Chiefs can move out of, even though Taylor's had a couple nice games in a row now. If you're Jalen Moore, you're coming and thinking, okay, this is going to be a showcase for me. I'm the most high-profile offense in football, the most high-profile team in football, and I'm going to get this done. I'm going to look really good protecting Patrick Mahomes. He's going to make me look good, and we're going to just gel for a year, and then maybe the Chiefs extend me, and I'm just this guy for the next 10 years. Maybe somebody else pays me in a couple of years, but I'm finally getting my chance to be the guy. Well, Jalen Moore signs, and then Josh Simmons is there at the end of the first round, and they take Josh Simmons. And I have to imagine, I don't know, he hasn't said any of this, but I have to imagine Jalen Moore was probably pretty bummed to see that note card get turned in there at the end of the first. So he goes, well, okay, Josh Simmons is coming off of a serious knee injury. He's probably not going to be ready, so at least I'm going to have a chance to take the job early in camp. I'm going to have a chance to be the guy, the incumbent, for a little while. Well, Josh Simmons is ready to go pretty much immediately. Okay, well, at least it's a rookie coming off an injury. We're going to compete. Unfortunately, Jalen Moore, it's never a competition. The rookie who looks good, who's healthy, he's going to get every rep at left tackle with the ones that he can possibly get in training camp. You're going to do some backup stuff with the left and right side. You'll get a couple reps with the starting ones on that right tackle when Juwan Taylor's out, but it's not going to be a whole lot. You might be the guy that steps in if Kingsley Suamataia can't hold on at left guard. You're just our expensive and well-paid, right? He's making good money for this, but you are our do-it-all backup guy for the foreseeable future. That is a far, far cry from what he had to be imagining when he signed with this team in March. And to his unending credit, I didn't hear a peep about it. I haven't had an inkling that he's been pouting or anything, which would be so easy to do, man. I know that backup players talk all the time about how you have to prepare as if you're the starter. And I think that's true. I believe that. But you also can't tell me that Patrick Mahomes and Gardner Minshew are in the same headspace an hour before kickoff every week. It's just not possible. You prepare that way, but it's still different knowing you're the guy. Like you just said, Jalen Moore wasn't running with the ones all week in practice. He wasn't thinking, okay, well, I've got a few days here to really get ready for a full day across from Aiden Hutchinson in an overall pretty good Lions pass rush. It was short notice, it was a quick elevation, and then he played really, really well at left tackle in a tough spot to make his first start with this team. I think you said it already, but the professionalism of what Jalen Moore has done so far this year, I don't think should be overlooked, and it wasn't overlooked by Andy Reid. They put out the clip out of the locker room post-game, or I guess it was yesterday morning, I think they posted it, and it's Andy talking to the locker room, and then he calls out Jalen Moore, who comes in and he leads the breakdown in the huddle in the locker room after the game. I think that is a really cool encapsulation of how Jalen Moore's year has gone so far. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's navigated these last 6 months.
What was your favorite part of the fight?
Oh, man. I mean, I knew that I think it was. Okay, no, I know for sure. It was Patrick Mahomes before the fight began. He puts his hand out to Brian Branch. And when Branch walks by, Mahomes kind of smirks and like smacks him on the back of the shoulder pad a little bit. Like, okay, bud. All right. Not knowing that would potentially, I guess, light the fuse for the next 2 minutes of chaos. I was nervous when Juju was on the ground. The pictures out of that have been pretty good. But I think the thing that really got me to smirk a little bit at the moment was the Mahomes like, okay, pal. Tap, tap, we'll see you later then. And then all hell broke loose shortly thereafter.
I have never, ever heard a defensive player say that he was tired of being bullied. You're supposed to be the bully. You're the one that tackles people. The fact that as a defensive player, you feel like all the other players have been ganging up on you, I'm sorry, that's funny to me.
I understand he got popped by Kingsley. Kingsley punished the jumper in Brian Branch. That's what linemen are supposed to do there. The idea that he's just been getting blocked so hard by Juju Smith-Schuster, who's played such a physical brand of football, that the vaunted physical Detroit Lions and their, like, incredible playmaking leader over there just got burnt out is truly hilarious. Yeah, I did think it was nice that they were able to draw blood as a defense eventually. I just would have suggested doing it before the game ended.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe. He is the pre- and post-game host for the Chiefs Radio Network, joining us for a couple more minutes. Are you surprised that Matt Nagy's name is already starting to pop up for some of these jobs? I imagine that's going to continue if Miami becomes available. I think they're going to want to hire an offensive-minded head coach. If the Giants become available, especially with Jackson Dart, I think that Nagy's going to be a candidate for most of these jobs that could potentially come open.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see if it's Tennessee with Mike Borgonzi calling the shots there, or if it's gonna be everybody. I was a little surprised, and look, like, it's kind of funny, like, Arthur Smith and Matt Nagy being the first two names to get floated out for the Titans job is pretty funny, just kind of considering, like, how their previous tenures have gone and what they've done since then. I do think that it makes sense outside of Kansas City for Matt Nagy to be in these conversations. I think Chiefs fans, by and large, have gotten pretty comfortable over the years just blaming the offensive coordinator, whoever it is, for whatever is going wrong, even though it is Andy Reid's offense. Meanwhile, Andy Reid is always very effusive in his praise, not just of Nagy, but of all of the guys on that coaching staff helping to build the game plan and everything. And he always... Andy Reid takes credit for takes blame for the bad plays and gives credit for the good plays to those guys. It's one of the things that I think must make him a pretty good coach to work for. But I think it makes sense that just whoever is closest to the hem of Patrick Mahomes' garment is always deserving of being in some of those head coaching interview discussions. And I think it makes sense if you want to have a guy that definitely did learn some things from his first head coaching stint, and he went to the playoffs with Mitch Trubisky, right? Like, I mean, it wasn't all bad there, but I think Nagy has unfairly been villainized by some Chiefs fans when the offense has sputtered. I also don't know that I would have him extremely high on a head coaching ranking right now, but if you're a team that maybe you felt like you've gotten burnt by the first time head coach things, and you're not gonna be in a potential John Harbaugh sweepstakes that I guess could pop up if Baltimore makes a change, I understand how you at least do bring a Matt Nagy type in for the interview. I think Tennessee makes the most sense as a serious destination, though. And then obviously that's a huge prize for Matt Nagy if he does have a chance to be a head coach again and he gets to coach Cam Ward doing it.
If you had to do a power ranking of Chiefs rivals, where would the Raiders rank?
Man, I mean, they've just been dropping for a long time now, right? At pre-Mahomes era, like in my childhood, of course, they're one or two with the Broncos, and then you mix like the Colts in for some of the high-profile games they had, I think. But now, the Bills are certainly above them. The Broncos, I think, have to be above them. The Chargers don't feel quite as much of a rival, even though they've been a better team for most of these few years. You might have an argument for an Eagles in there, even at this point. I think I'd probably put the Raiders at maybe four or five still, purely because both of these organizations do have so much shared history and so much, I think, like, mutual respect for where all of that hatred and history comes from. And both of these, well, I don't know if I can say both of these teams. The Chiefs, at least, are very, very tied to their own history. The Raiders moving to Vegas takes another lick out of that for them. So I still think they're in, like, the top five of Chiefs rivals because I do think the history is that important. But the games haven't felt that way in quite a long time, even with that Christmas meltdown in recent history.
I can't remember if I've asked you this, so if I have, I apologize. What is the word that you can't spell without spell check? My word is convenience. What's your word?
Oh, man. Unfortunately, receiver took me a long time in this line of work. I did eventually figure that out. I feel like I've got one really obvious one that I can't think of right now because I just like the battle that not only do you need spell check for, but sometimes you need to take a couple of passes at it. You get too many vowels in there and I might struggle. I'm thinking, I've figured out refrigerator. I've figured out receiver. I figured out February. I've gotten most of those problematic losses from my childhood, repping plenty of spelling bee type reps, but I don't know. I feel like I should have a better answer. You can ask me again next week, and I'll keep an eye on it this week and figure out when I have one of those moments when I not only, again, can I not spell the word, I can't get close enough to the word for my phone to fix it for me. But some of those are out there for sure.
Who is your favorite fictional football player?
Okay. So I'm thinking of lots of them. I'm not thinking of any that I have an immediate, extremely strong feeling towards. Have you had other answers on this that are like,
no,
dominating?
It popped in my head to ask you because I mean, the obvious answer is Tim Riggins, but I didn't know if you were a Friday Night Lights guy. I wasn't sure.
No, I never was a Friday Night Lights guy, and I've only ever heard good things, and I respect it entirely. I can think of lots of bad football being played in movies, but I really hate to leave you on like two non-answers. I feel bad about how this is going from a radio perspective. I don't know that I've got. I'm sure I do. I'm sure there's a fictional football player that I think of often. How about Chargin' Chuck from the Mario games?
No,
not a movie.
Okay, all right. Bye. Bye, Joshua Briscoe. That's Joshua Briscoe on the show. Just what's happening here? You know who I'm going to throw another name out there? I'm going to throw Alvin Mack from the program. I'm going to throw a little Alvin Mack on the defensive side of the ball. Just a relentless pass rusher. I'm going with relentless. Derek Thomas, like, just coming off the edge, disruptor, Alvin Mack. I hate that an injury derailed his career. Never played football again. He was going to buy his mom a house.
Let me ask you a question, because it's a movie, but it's based on real life. Do Gary Bertier and Julius Campbell count?
No, those are real people.
Yeah, but in the movie, Gary Bertier is different than in real life.
Okay, but yes.
He gets hurt in the movie in high school. That's not his real life.
But yes, they're based off real people. Yeah. No,
I was just asking the rules on the question.
You can use Willie Beeman. You can use Jonathan Mox. You can use Lance Harbor. No, you can't use Mike Winchell from Front. No, that's a real human being.
I was just asking the rules.
Booby Miles. That's a real person.
Like, can you Smash?
Yeah, Smash is a fake person. Now, he's based off a real person.
He's based off Booby Miles.
If you want to do Smash Williams, you can go Smash Williams.
I mean, the obvious answer is Tim Riggins.
Some people are saying it's Bobby Boucher.
I think
there's a lot of great fictional football players.
Shane Falco. You don't like that movie. I don't get why you don't like that movie.
I don't know. I don't know how you can hate on Alex Smith and then your favorite player be William Falco. They're the same human being.
No,
they're the same person. You love a game manager quarterback. That's your guy.
Shane Falco is basically just no jail Adam Sandler from Longest Yard.
Shane Falco
character.
Was Rob Johnson from the Buffalo 100%. Bills. That's who he was. He was Rob Johnson.
He was left-handed Doug Flutie.
Yeah.
Great in college, disappeared, and had a moment in the league.
That was your favorite player? Somebody said mine is Hot Hands from Little Giants. That's what I'm talking about. Give me a Hot Hands. We should have got that for Sky Moore when he was here. He should have caught him the Hot Hands. Becky O'Shea. What you know about a Becky O'Shea? Rob, you don't know about a Becky O'Shea, man. You didn't have Little Giants on VHS
Icebox.
Back in the day.
Calling her Becky O'Shea is wild.
That's her name.
She's the Icebox.
Yeah, she's Becky O'Shea. Can we find her real life person and have her on the show over the summer? That's what we should do. We should, during the All-Star break this year, we should just find actors who were fictional football players and ask them about that. That's what we should do. That should be our responsibility for the summer. Let's start working on that now. Let's have Becky O'Shea on the show and ask her what it was like to be the Icebox. Can you draw us the annexation of Puerto Rico? That would be a phenomenal experiment. That's what I would love to do.
She was last on television in 2013.
Well, she's about to be on the drive in 2026. That's all that matters. Coming up on the other side, there are three players on the Chiefs offense that I want to give credit to. I'll tell you who. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. Tune in Mondays at 4 to hear the play-by-play voice of the Chiefs, Mitch Holtis, on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. at least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, there are three players that I would like to give some credit to because I think they have been very instrumental in helping the Chiefs' offense turn things around. You know what? I'm actually going to expand it and give credit to a fourth individual as sort of an honorable mention now that I'm thinking about it. Kingsley Suamataia deserves a lot of credit. The Chiefs told us that they felt he was better suited at guard than at tackle. Now, they didn't really have a choice. They tried him at tackle. They realized very quickly it was not going to work. But they have never wavered that Kingsley Suamataia was their left guard. When a lot of us, and I say us because I am included in this, suggested that you should put Jalen Moore there and put your five best offensive linemen out on the field, the Chiefs have never wavered that Kingsley Suamataia is their guard. It is working out for them. He is playing at a very high level. This offensive line is starting to come together and eliminate some of those mistakes. That starts from you having a very strong and cohesive front five. From left tackle over in Josh Simmons, who has been a day one starter for this team, over on the other side with Juwan Taylor, who we have not heard a peep from in the last couple of weeks. Not a penalty. Not a nothing, not lined up incorrectly, not a hole, not an illegal procedure. Now, let me knock on wood here because I don't want to jinx it, but it feels like they are on the pathway to fixing some of the mental and physical errors that we saw from Juwan Taylor. That doesn't mean that you have to play perfect, but you couldn't continue to carry someone who was going to commit penalties at the pace that he was committing them in. Now, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, what did I think was going to stop? Did I think it would be Harrison Butker missing kicks or Juwan Taylor penalties? I'd have told you Harrison Butker was going to figure it out. So the Chiefs have fixed one of their problems so far this season. Now we are working to see if they can fix another one of their problems when it comes to Harrison Butker and the missed field goals. So let me give Kingsley Suamataia, let me give him the honorable mention. Now let's go to the wide receiver room. Because the wide receiver room has taken some arrows, and I certainly have fired my fair share of them. Hollywood Brown right now is on pace for 85 catches for 855 yards and 8 touchdowns. Now, I don't think that's what he does, but you can live with this version of Hollywood Brown. I don't know what the targets and shares are going to look like once you get Rashee Rice back, but if I told you that, hey, this is all you need from Hollywood Brown. You need him to be a 4-catch for 45 yards and possibly score a touchdown. I think everybody listening would have taken that. That's what he's been. I think we can agree that the game plan switched in game one when he got 16 targets and they were asking him to be something that he's not. But since then, 30 yards, 42 yards, 38 yards, 48 yards, 45 yards. I mean, we know what he is. He's not a guy that's likely going to give you a big number, but you don't need him to give you a big number. That's not what you signed him to do. You signed him to do exactly what he's been in that role. Be a tough, willing to go over the middle. Can you get somewhere between 40 and 50 yards? And if he can do that consistently, there will always be room for you in the National Football League. He's also stayed healthy during a time that we were all kind of worried whenever they would get Rashee Rice back, could they get all of their wide receivers? I wasn't worried about Rashee Rice. You weren't necessarily as worried about Xavier Worthy, especially when you found out that they weren't going to put him on IR and he didn't need surgery. The one you were worried about was Hollywood Brown. He has stayed healthy so far this season. Again, he is on pace for 85 catches for 855 yards and 8 touchdowns. Now, I think the targets are about to go down. I mean, he is on average right now for 124 targets. He ain't getting that this season. He ain't getting 124 targets. Not in this offense, but he is having a very, very good start to his season. I also got to give Juju Smith-Schuster a lot of love for the way that he has played these last couple of weeks as well. Now, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but these last couple of weeks, he's been critical. If you look at Juju and what he's trending for, he is trending for 53 catches, 600 yards, and a couple of touchdowns. You can live with that with Juju. This is what I mean when guys are just filling in their role. We talk about next man up, but sometimes as equally as important as next man up, it's know your role and execute your role. Remember Bill Belichick's old saying, do your job? Right now, they are getting Marquise Brown to do his job. They are getting Juju Smith-Schuster to do their job. They are not dynamic players in that way. They are nice complementary role pieces that fill in what you're doing. And if those guys are going to be your fourth and your fifth receiver, you can certainly live with that. It means you can move on from a guy like Jason Brownlee because you got experienced wide receivers that you're throwing it to. Tell me the last time that you thought you could go four or five deep at wide receiver and feel good about it. With Rice, Worthy, Hollywood Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster. We're not even talking about a guy in Jalen Royals that they drafted. He's not a part of this mix right now, but you assume at some point he's going to be a part of this mix. So if we're going to talk about the offense turning things around, we got to talk about either guys improving the way that Kingsley Suamataia has or guys executing their role in Juju Smith-Schuster and Hollywood Brown. And you know what? Because now you have so many more options at wide receiver and there isn't the stress on Travis Kelce that you shouldn't be putting on a 30-something-year-old individual. Kelce has been very good. Now, Kelce got off to a little bit of a rough start. He was screaming at folks and throwing stuff, and it was a lot of nonsense coming on. Now, I don't know if it was Taylor Swift's publicist. I don't know what it was. But the moment that his fiance started promoting that album, Travis's attitude changed. Travis been a completely different person since that album been out. He been cool. He ain't been yelling at folks. Now, the offense has turned around. Not a whole lot to yell about right now with what they've been doing. But this is the version of Travis Kelce you can live with. This is the one. He had 6 catches for 78 yards on Sunday. He had 7 catches for 61 yards in the Jacksonville game. 5 catches for 48 yards against Baltimore. He's maybe not going to give you the 7 for 125 and 2 touchdowns like he could in his prime. But you're talking about a guy right now that you're still throwing the ball to somewhere between 5 to 8 times and is getting you somewhere between 50 to 75 yards every time out there. You obviously will take that, especially at his age. So I got to give credit where credit is due. It hasn't just been Xavier Worthy coming back and that's really been it. And now he's putting up monster games. He's played well. But since Xavier Worthy has come back, they have really started to round out and find everybody's role. Kelce's been a leader. Kelce's been great. Juju's been great. Hollywood's been great. You've been getting more contribution from your run game from Isaiah Pacheco. You've been getting a little bit more from Rashard Smith, implementing him into the offense. Kareem Hunt continues to be someone you're very confident in short yardage situations. Guys have stayed healthy. Guys have played well. Guys have been a major reason of how this offense has turned things around. And now you feel like this offense is ready to run. Now let's see what kind of game shape Rashee Rice is in. Let's see how many snaps he can participate on Sunday. But for me, it's always been about ramping up to get him ready for the game at Buffalo. That's the most important game that you have this season. On the road against the team that you think is an AFC championship contending type team that you know you're likely going to see down the road. So can you get him ready over these next 2 games, whether it's against Vegas and Washington, can you get him ramped up that he can really help you in a couple of weeks against Buffalo? That's all I care about with Rice.
I think, pivoting away from Rice and going back to those players you highlighted, I think it shows something that has me excited for the return of Rashee Rice. And not just what Rice brings to the offense, but I feel like Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, Patrick Mahomes, the power structure of the Chiefs offense has found a way to get the most out of players in their role. And now if you slide Rashee Rice into a role, I think you can even get more out of those players you highlighted, the Juju's, the Hollywood Browns, the Travis Kelce's. You can get more out of them because Rashee Rice is going to take a lot of the load off their plate. And now it's what Mitch said the other day. It's not Travis Kelce in the middle kind of draws four eyeballs. It's, oh, Rashee Rice is drawing the four eyeballs. So now on third and three, people might be alert to, hey, Juju's kind of their chain mover. But now it's hard to do that because they got Juju and Travis Kelce out there, and you can't cover everyone. So I think what's exciting about the Chiefs offense is everyone is fitting into a role, and those roles are going to get even easier to live within once Rashee Rice comes back from his suspension this week.
And I also think it's important to note, I mean, I forgot about Tyquan Thornton. So, like, you legitimately right now feel very confident in your five wide receivers. From Rice, Brown, Thornton, Juju, Brown. I mean, that's not the best wide receiver room in the league. It's a more than capable room, and it's a room that I think clearly showed you. As long as you have Rice or Worthy there to be the player that takes
tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Attention away, there's enough there in surrounding pieces to make it work. The offense didn't work when you removed Rice and Worthy from the team, and I thought those guys really struggled without having that explosive, dynamic playmaker. But when you've added that guy in, you see the attention that he can take and the pop that he can give you in the run game and with some of the underneath stuff, and then you get everybody filling their role, you can have a very dangerous offense, which is what the Chiefs currently have. They have a very, very dangerous offense. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the parity right now that exists in the AFC and in the National Football League. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive. With Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into the show. I want to play this audio for you guys because we had Joshua Briscoe on the show earlier, and he made a very good point. I try to give credit to people who make very good points. Now, last week on this show, I gave Rob a homework assignment. I asked Rob to make a list, and I asked Rob to write down every team in the league that he thought was good. For the AFC, he only wrote down one team. He wrote down the Buffalo Bills. Now, I would have told you that Buffalo was the best team in the AFC. They still might be the best team in the AFC. They just got dominated by the Atlanta Falcons on Monday Night Football. I mean, start to finish, dominated. The Chargers got off to a hot start, 3-0. They then lost two games. I mean, they needed to scratch and claw last week against the Dolphins for them to win. So much, it's got Tua questioning their leadership.
I think it starts with the leadership in helping articulate that for the guys. And then what we're expecting out of the guys, right? We're expecting this. Are we getting that? Are we not getting that? We have guys showing up to player-only meetings late. Guys not showing up to player-only meeting. Like, there's a lot that goes into that.
Hey, when do you guys think Mike McDaniel's getting fired? Because he's getting fired. I mean, there's no question in my mind. Did you hear what the quarterback of the team said? He said there's no leadership. You're one of the leaders. So I just, it don't sound to me like things are going very well in Miami. So Rob only put one team in the good category in the AFC. Who knows who's good? Joshua Briscoe, dear friend of the show, he has a theory.
Let me run this by you because, no, I don't have a power ranking, but I have a new theory of the 2025 NFL season that's making it a little bit easier for me. Here's the theory. Everybody's the Chargers now. all of them. There are 31 Los Angeles Chargers and then the New York Jets. And that's it. Everybody else is some version of the Chargers. Pretty good and can beat you. Pretty injured and probably won't beat you. Super Bowl hopes. High draft pick hopes. Like, there is just such a tar pit of NFL teams right now that are all so close together. The margins are so thin that if you tell me, yeah, I get Patrick Mahomes and a 3-3 football team that's getting its number one offensive weapon back, I think that's probably the best team in football because everybody is just neck and neck.
If you are looking at it right now, we can just take the AFC and we can go to the NFC here in a bit. The teams that I would say are outright eliminated. We don't need to talk about you anymore. You shouldn't come up in conversation anymore. Dolphins, Jets, Browns. What do we do with the Ravens? Because you know I've been saying for 3 weeks now that I don't think the Ravens are making the postseason. The Ravens are sitting at 1-5. They do have a bye week, and they are getting Lamar Jackson back. Now, I'll say this. You better get going. You already got 5 losses before Halloween. Like, you need to get red hot. I don't think the Ravens are getting red hot. Not with that defense. They have the worst defense in the AFC. They have allowed more points than any other team in the conference. Like, you're bad defensively. I don't think you fix things. So I'm willing to eliminate Baltimore. So we are at Miami. The Jets are out. The Ravens are out. The Browns are out. I imagine the Bengals also out in this conversation. The Titans are out. That kind of seems like it's it in terms of just being done. And probably the Raiders. So we're talking about right now in the AFC, there's probably still 10 teams that you think are viable playoff teams at this point. And you don't even want to go to the NFC because in the NFC, there's not many teams that I would say are just outright eliminated. It's basically the Saints, Cardinals, and the Giants are essentially it. There are about 8 teams right now in the league that are done, that have no chance. And then there's 24 other teams that feel as interchangeable as possible. We all laughed at the Dallas Cowboys. Man, the Cowboys, especially with that tie, they're not completely out of winning their division. Now, I don't think they will because of their offense. I mean, excuse me, their defense. Their defense is also bad. They've given up the second most points in the National Football League. But a majority of these teams, from Chicago to Minnesota to Jacksonville to Houston, being 2-3 and being a couple games back in their division, for the most part, Rob, everybody is basically still alive in this thing.
It is. I like Josh Briscoe's theory that everyone's the Chargers. It is for a league that preaches parity. I don't know we've ever seen parity at this level. And maybe in 3-4 weeks, the cream of the crop will start to rise and it'll be the Chiefs and the Bills and, you know, whoever in the AFC, and then the NFC will have a lot of the same, you know, the Eagles and the Lions. But for right now, I feel like if I just named a random NFL team, you might say, I think they're good, but I could poke holes in their resume. I might name an NFC team. It doesn't matter. Everyone has a fatal flaw. So it is a really fun football season because I really don't know what to expect on any given Sunday.
And that's why I think when it comes to Buffalo, and we'll talk more about this, I think at least when it comes to Buffalo, I don't really know what to do with the Bills. Now, I don't want to play the schedule game with every team in the National Football League. I actually give Buffalo credit for the win against the Ravens. I know that things have turned poorly for the Ravens, but at the beginning of the season, the Ravens were healthy. The Bills get credit for week one, in my opinion, with their win against the Ravens. I mean, since then, their wins are the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Saints. I mean, if you were just going off what has happened, the Bills have beaten 4 of the bottom 6 teams in the National Football League, and any team that they have played that can remotely put up a fight, a team like New England right now with a very promising young quarterback who's playing well, they beat them. Atlanta, I don't know what to make of Atlanta. Atlanta can go on the road and beat somebody and then come back home and then get beat 30-0 by the Carolina Panthers and then turn around and beat the Buffalo Bills. Like, that's just how crazy it is right now, where the Giants can lose to the Saints and then turn around 3 days later and then beat the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, I have no clue what to make of any of this information right now in the National Football League. I don't know who's good. I don't know who's bad. I don't know who's a contender. I don't know who's a pretender. I don't know what's real. I don't know what's fake. That's football in 2025. I would say that's the same thing happening in college football, too, that we are seeing college football mirror the NFL in a lot of ways, where it's not a big deal to lose anymore. It used to be if you lost one game in college football, that was the end-all, be-all. We had to throw your season away. You can get dominated in week one against Florida State and then turn around and be the best team in the SEC less than a month later. That's just how quickly things turn in football now.
It is very fast evolving. And I feel like as much as it's fast evolving, I think maybe just this year we are seeing the talent even out. Like, we talk about how in college football, like, it used to be like the haves and the have-nots. And you still kind of see that in college football. And the NFL had a more level playing field. But if you delved into it, in the NFL, there were like the Chiefs and, you know, back in the day, the Ravens, and there were teams with big talent differences between them and like the Jets. I feel like everyone in the middle is kind of equal talented right now. Like, we just saw on Sunday, you mentioned Tua to start the segment. The Dolphins gave the Chargers everything they wanted in Miami on Sunday. It took a great Ladd McConkey play and a game-winning field goal to beat them. How many times have we seen 1-5 teams take on teams at home and they just get drubbed in the NFL? I don't know. Maybe it's not talent. Maybe it's coaching. I don't know. But it feels like there is no longer a wide chasm in the NFL between the haves and the have-nots.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes right now, he is the favorite to win NFL MVP. We'll talk about it. I think there is a strong contender. I'll tell you who it is. Keep it right here. So drive.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.